you were lip syncing.
Only if you were actually in the studio. Otherwise, I was just missing. Oh my goodness, the issues never end around here between us and everything else. It's a world gone mad, right? Yeah. Living in chaos, you got to expect.
It's a mad world.
I know, that was a great movie, and if you've never seen it, that's your job for today. It'll make you feel happy. So, let's see.
What's your name?
I don't know. I was just deciding if I should be someone else.
Go for it.
It is I, Mary Sunshine.
It's a mad, mad world.
And I would be Ethel Merman, just like the lady in my neighborhood when I was a kid.
There you go.
You have a voice like Ethel Merman. Yeah. So anyway, I'm Aaron Ryan in real life.
Hi, Aaron. I'm Bill.
We can hear you fine, Bill.
Yeah. Yeah, you were
Things
kinda,
are looking up for you.
You were kind of, yeah, I paid the bill.
What's happening in the tractor division?
Well, Pape Machinery is still our sponsor right now. They're located up at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in city of Shasta Lake. And they can get you into a brand new John Deere tractor just in time for Christmas. Go up and see them. They got a great selection right now. Probably got 40 tractors in stock to choose from.
What?
They got mowers. They got attachments. They got it all going on.
How about those John Deere Gators? You got those Gator things?
Oh, got Gators. Oh, yeah. They got a line of those. They got lots of stock up there. Go up and see them. You can drive them around and see which one fits your fancy.
But if you want small gloves because you have small hands, you got to go to Fall River. If you just happen to be driving by the other store in Fall River, you can go up there and buy gloves. Yeah.
People in Redding and Chesa Lake all have big hands.
Yeah. Well, we'll just leave that alone. We have a doctor going to come on here in just a minute. She can explain to us how that works.
Anyway, go up and see them. Their phone number is 530-226-9226. Or you can catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da! How great is that? So we have Kathy. And we have Officer Joe with us today.
Good morning. Or good afternoon.
Oh, and do we have a guest?
And you are the guestest with the mostest or whatever. You're always finding us somebody. So.
Well, I found you the creme de la creme of what's about marijuana in the United States today. And we're going to get to hear from her. And I appreciate and respect this person very much.
And that is... about time we got back to this topic because it's such a big deal. Such a big deal. And honestly, right after you walked me into a thing where I had to show some pictures and a bunch of stuff to the California Water Board. No, the Water...
Water Users
Water
Association.
Agencies. What is it? Associated California Water Agencies.
AQUA, the Association of California Water Users
Man, they got quite a handle going on.
Yeah, they do.
There.
It just well, there's a lot of waterness here, so you don't want to get the right water people. But that whole thing is on the WeThePeopleRadio.us. If you go to that site and you click on the tab that says pot, you can see all the slides on there. So we showed them all of that and then told them, hey, by the way, a lot of you are in L.A. You think it has nothing to do with you. But just so you know, all this stuff with all these chemicals and everything is being grown up here, harvested up here, and taken down and sold in your dispensaries there in L.A. And I'm sure there were many of them who thought, oh, it's just silliness.
Right.
And what was it, 2 weeks later?
Yeah.
A week?
Two weeks later, Lieutenant for Siskiyou County Sheriff stops... a truck coming out of the Shasta Vista Grows, 4,000 pounds of highly tainted, chemically laden marijuana in the back, and the driver said it was being delivered to a certain dispensary in L.A., naming the dispensary, and there's a license investigation going on right now.
Wow.
And that wasn't the only truck. They actually got a couple more after that.
But it was like right after.
Yeah.
I mean, just exactly what we told them was happening.
I know. Crazy.
And there it was right there. So
are they keeping the good stuff for up here and shipping the bad stuff down there?
Yeah, that's
what
they're doing.
Is that what's going on?
Yeah, the stuff that only has spray adhesive on it, they're keeping for here. The stuff that has the carbofuron and all that, that's going south.
Oh, that's going down. Yeah. Okay, good.
I think it's safe to say, Aaron, that now, I with fairly good certainty that 100% of the marijuana, just about 100% of the marijuana that's going into the dispensaries now is probably chemically laden in with something bad that's harmful for you. Unless the dispensary actually has a licensed grow that's actually being physically inspected, and we know all the games they play there. They've got random batch testing. Oh, that's dirty. We'll let you clean it. People don't have it. They advertise it as organic.
Well, now, I thought most of those co-ops all took extra caution and spent extra money on testing and made sure their products were all
It's a good thing
pure.
This isn't TV. The faces.
It's all natural.
Insert faces here.
You know, Roni.
It's just a plant.
Dr. Levitt will tell us a story today, Aaron, about one of her emergency room charges that she took care of, a child. It's an interesting story, but I'll let
well,
her
Well, let's.
Her into that.
Okay, so a quick trip on her credentials. Dr. Ronit Lev, L-E-V. She was the first chief medical officer of the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy from 2018 to 2020. I'm positive on this one, she brought refreshing frontline medical experience to the national health policy. And considering what was going on just after that, we wish she would have stayed. She's nationally acclaimed medical expert and speaker who continues to treat patients in an emergency department and hosts a podcast titled High Truths. You can find it at hightruths.com. We have linked that on the page for today. And she uses data to drive change and is frequently quoted in print and television media. And if you go to hightruths.com and you click on the news part, I mean, it's like, the podcast is fantastic, and there are a zillion links to interviews and all that sort of thing. So if you, her medical publications known as the Death Diaries studied the details of prescription patterns of people who died from accidental medication overdoses, giving insight to causes of overdose and directing prevention efforts. So there's a really, Dr. Lev, you've got a really wide range of things and tons of things that I'm sure we did not include. So no pressure, but it's all you now. Good afternoon. Is she in the cone of silence? She's out of the cone of silence.
Hi, Ronit. Can you hear us up here in Redding? I know it's a long way from Southern California. How are you doing?
Hi, yeah. Can you hear me okay?
There she is. She's out of the cone of silence. Oh, where would you like to start us today?
Well, you want to have a conversation about marijuana, right?
Of course. Always.
Always.
And how great it is, right? Yeah, well, natural and wonderful and beneficial for humans.
Yeah, so, again, I'm an emergency physician. I see marijuana poisonings every day. And we have a long time, right? So we could talk about definitions. What's the difference between, you know, medical, you know, like FDA regulated stuff that I can prescribe and what's in the dispensary. We could talk about potency. We could talk about what's Delta 8, the growing brain, why that's important. And then, you know, I always have, you know, lots of cases from the front line to talk about what do I see in the emergency room.
Well, we're kind of here at the front end of all of this. There are a lot of people, many, many people, who really would, they might believe there were chemicals, they might believe it was tainted, you know, some of those things we might be able to convince people of, but I'll tell you what, whenever I have mentioned that there are a lot of emergency room visits due to marijuana, I immediately get massive pushback on that, oh, well, that's something else, they might have been smoking marijuana too, but that didn't cause it. Could you please peel that back for us?
Yeah. And are we starting this conversation?
We are.
Yeah, we are.
We're live.
We
are live, Renee.
I know. It's kind of
strange. No pressure.
Kind of a strange beginning here. Sorry.
All right. Well, I do. I see marijuana poisonings every single day, every single shift. So do my fellow emergency physicians from across the nation. And they see that, and we all see that in a number of ways. Most commonly, we would see psychosis associated with marijuana, and we tend to blow it off. I could just think of my last shift, I had one of our physician assistants see a patient, and he said, oh, this guy's psychotic. He needs a psych consult. And it sounds very simple, and we could all blow it off. But then when I talked to the guy, it's a, you know, 18-year-old kid pacing the room, eyes wide open, not coping well. And when I talk to him about drugs, he uses marijuana. When I ask him, what are you using specifically, he'll say wax. That's 98% THC.
And what's it called?
Wax.
Wax.
Oh, wax. Okay.
So take the marijuana and distill it down to the most concentrated form of THC.
And
if we just blow it off, we're doing this poor man a disservice. Because if he is 18 years old, if he understands what's happening to his mind right now and quits, he could have a normal life. And if not, if he ignores it, if the medical community ignores it, if people tell him, oh, it's good for you, then he's condemned to a life of schizophrenia and chronic psychosis. And we're seeing that in our country.
Well, and can't we even, I mean, I hate to jump the gun here, but by ignoring this issue, when we talk about the mass shooters, when we talk about the harm on our society from letting these people go, like, and not doing something and not intervening and doing something, aren't we starting to connect the dots here?
I don't think people are connecting the dots in that way, because when we talk about mass shooters, there's many different causes.
Right.
There is actually a profile to the mass shooters that I've heard from our fellows in law enforcement, and they tend to be young, single males. They call it incel. I didn't know what that meant. Involuntarily celibate.
Oh, yeah.
And there are a number
associated
with marijuana use. But because there's many different factors, right?
Right.
That profile, adding marijuana, it's hard to differentiate it. But we know, but to say anybody who uses marijuana has become, you know, a
right.
Mass shooter, that's not correct.
No.
But to say marijuana is associated with mental health issues.
Right.
Marijuana is associated with violence. That is fair. We have data on that.
Ronit, we have here in Reading, our Mercy Hospital. Can I say what hospital you're attached at, or would you prefer me not to say that?
No, you could say I'm at Scripps Mercy Hospital, and it doesn't matter because this is a problem at every single hospital across America.
So our hospital reports a 39% intake of patients who are drug tested test positive for high potency THC. Do you have any statistics for your hospital?
We're about, of all the drug tests that we do, so that's a loaded question, like, because every hospital may be a little different in selectivity of who they drug test. So we're very picky. We have a lot of volume of patients. We don't bogged down with as many drug tests on every patient. We order drug screens on every mental health patient. They don't all give us urine. It's not as easy to get urine from people. But of the ones that we send to the lab, about 50% or more are positive for marijuana.
Wow.
Ronnie.
But 76% are positive for methamphetamine. That's a bigger wow.
Right. Right.
We see.
And the combination.
From interviews we do in our high schools up here, about 95% of our students have been exposed to high-potency marijuana in some form in the last month. It doesn't mean that they used it, but they were around it. It was at a party. They may have used it themselves. Their friends may have used it. They spoke about it in depth. And when we go into the schools, we find that the kids are very adept at the use of marijuana today. Are you experiencing the same thing down there in Southern California?
So there's national data about, you know, how many people use marijuana, what percent, what are the past 30 day use, last year exposure use. And we use the data depending our point of view, right? So if you want to say that there's a problem, you could say, wow, look, 90-something percent of our kids have been exposed. And of course, it's going to be a big number. There's billboards everywhere, right, normalizing, commercializing drug use. But if I'm going to a school and I imagine the data, your question is the same as what you're seeing in Northern California and Southern California. But I make a point when I talk to young people is I want to emphasize the social norm. And the social norm is that most people do not use drugs. More and more young people are making the good choice to protect their brain and not expose themselves to cigarettes and alcohol or any type of drugs, including marijuana, until their brain is done growing. And any patient I see that's under the age of 25 or so, I ask them, do you know how old you are when your brain is done growing? And they all know this. They know it's 25 years old. And that information is getting out to our young people. I think that we need to emphasize that social norm, because if you don't, if they feel that, oh, well, everybody's doing it, and so it must be okay. And that's not true. If we look at the, you know, if we look at the actual data, how many high school kids are using marijuana on a daily basis? It's a smaller number.
Right.
But when we make it seem like everybody's using it, then the people who are not using are kind of quiet in the background. They don't say anything.
Sure.
And it empowers the people who are using instead of the other way around. We need to promote the social norm that most people are not doing that.
Good call. And we have to take a really quick break here, but when we come back, I'd like you to speak to the edibles versus the smoking versus the vaping and all the different ways that this is being utilized by anybody, young people, old people, all the way around, because there are a lot of people who think, oh, well, I don't smoke pot, but like I eat all these edible things and all this other stuff, and I'm not sure people are... not sure people are wised up about a lot of that. So from a medical perspective, it'd be nice to give them some factual information. Since they're not getting it from the marijuana industry, that's certainly not happening. So our guest is Dr. Ronit Lev. She is an emergency room physician down in San Diego. You can find all the information about the show and the archive after the fact. Please share it with friends and family at wethepeopleradio.us.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without crying. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you can. Doctor, my eyes. Was I unwise to leave them open for so long?
Election time is upon us, and time to vote for candidates who understand how destructive marijuana is for our country, how it harms our youth, hurts our workforce, causing health and psychological problems. Perhaps you've witnessed evil politicians taking marijuana money. Well, there is an alternative. We endorse Jess Harris for Siskiyou County Supervisor. Jess has the knowledge, skills, and most importantly, the will to address illegal dope growers in Siskiyou. Jess has worked tirelessly developing sound policy to deal with the scourge of drugs in our communities. Vote Jess Harris 2024. I'm Officer Joe, and I approve this message.
Today's the day. We give all the secrets away. So
I don't think it's a secret.
Oh, it is from a lot of people.
Well, no, because they just don't want to listen.
Oh, well, it's still a secret. Don't mess up my musical selections, Kathy. All right, Dr. Love, what's the deal? What's the difference, or is there even one?
Yeah, so let's talk about that. Let's do a little comparison, okay?
Sure.
FDA-approved Marinol. This is THC that I could write a prescription for today and for many years for people who have the right indication. I have to do that as a doctor would, which means checking, you know, medication interactions, getting a history, physical, balancing risks and benefits. But I can write a prescription for cannabis today. THC is FDA approved in the form of Marinol. If you look at the package label of Marinol, the maximum amount allowable dose is 20 milligrams. Okay, so remember that 20 milligrams is the most amount. That's the maximum allowed per day by FDA approved. Let's compare that to a 1990s 1 gram joint. That is 50 milligrams for one gram joint of 1990s. Today's 2020 joint is 200 milligrams, so four times as much.
Yikes.
And way more than FDA approved. So that's what the joints are doing. Edibles are another entity completely. They take the marijuana, distill it in oils or other ways, and put it in food substances or drinks. It's not the plant that's grind. You know, I used to think, oh, a brownie is like, oh, you take just the plant and you grind it up and put it in the brownie. No, it's much more sophisticated than that. They take the THC, distill it, put it in food and beverages. And different states have different laws. In California, where you and I are, there are regulations that say the maximum amount for an edible is 100 milligrams per package. The equivalency of, though, for an edible compared to a joint is like five times as much, equivalent to 500 milligrams. So, again, that's 10 times as much as a 1 gram joint from a 1990s. Edibles work a little differently. When you eat them, you don't feel the effect right away, right? When you smoke, it absorbs into your blood a lot faster. When you eat something, there's a thing called first pass effect of the liver. Your stomach digests it. Your liver goes through it. And it can take a couple hours before you feel anything. So people may, you know, eat the brownie or cookie or beverage and like, hey, I'm not feeling anything. Why am I not feeling anything? And then you take another bite, and you can end up in the emergency room. Much more potent, though, the effect is with the edibles than on the joints. Also, when you're smoking, you kind of self-regulate. If people are feeling too much, they can, you know, stop and or go more. But when you're using edibles, you don't feel anything. You can go on and eat the whole chocolate bar and have a terrible effect. And then there are concentrates. Concentrates are THC that is in the forms of shatters and dabs and waxes, kind of like the gentleman that I told you about. You can have 8 grams, and each of these are 80% THC. That equals 6,400 milligrams, or 128
1990s. What could go wrong?
So this is not for mama's marijuana or your 19, you know, the hippies' marijuana. This is a genetically modified plant, genetically engineered food and beverages, and high-potency concentrates that really behave like a hard drug, like methamphetamine. And I've seen the same clinical behavior in patients who come in extremely agitated, violent reaction, and the whole staff thinking this is bath salts or methamphetamines or some crazy reaction, and then they test only for THC. I had one patient like that. He came in, it looked like he was beat up, but he was only tearing up his apartment by himself. Ambulance came. He had to be sedated. He was in the emergency department for many, many hours. And when he finally kind of detoxed from his effect, I asked him what he took, because he only tested for marijuana. Maybe he took something else. We can't test for everything. So I asked him, and he said he took a gummy. And I said, how many gummies did you take? And it was just one. And that goes to another thing. There's no controls in what you're buying from dispensaries. You know, if I go to a pharmacy and I'm getting, you know, 500 milligrams of acetaminophen, I can count on the fact that there's 500 milligrams of acetaminophen and there's no heavy metals or lead or something else. There is regulation. There are standards to buy stuff from a pharmacy. But there aren't those standards when you go to a dispensary. So you may think that you're buying, you know, a gummy, but in that bag of gummy, we call it the chocolate chip effect, that you may have one gummy that has all the THC in it, and then the other gummies may have nothing in it, and you are, there's no guarantee that you're not getting lead, aspergillus, other contaminants. And as a matter of fact, there have been studies looking at that and recalls on that for both smoked products and edibles that have all these toxins in them.
Ronnie, your colleague, Dr. Ken Finn, whom I know you're readily familiar with, and both of you are on ISIC, the International Association of Doctors Advising on Cannabis, he reported that he saw patients that were coming in self-reporting up to 5,000 milligrams of THC. Are you experiencing any of those same kind of things?
You know what? I haven't asked my patients that so much. I ask them because I don't know if they would really know how many milligrams they're taking. People don't really know what they're taking. So I ask, what form of marijuana? Are you smoking, flower, using edibles, waxes? If I get that far, and I ask how often. And I haven't really made the calculation like Dr. Finn has done. And that's important because then clinically, my goal is to make people feel better and understand what's happening to them. And if I understand how long they've been using it, then I could say, you know what, you probably have an addiction and you'll have withdrawal, which is real. And most patients say, oh, no, I can quit. I don't have withdrawal. But then explain.
Sure.
But let me explain what withdrawal to marijuana is, and then they're listening. It's not like withdrawal from alcohol where you're shaking and seeing pink elephants, and not withdrawal like opioids where you're also physically extremely sick. It's more like withdrawing from caffeine or cigarettes where you get a headache, where you're anxious, where you can't sleep, and people understand that. And then they realize that, and I say, but that lasts about 2 weeks. If you can get through that, you know, then you can get better. And that's important because, like I said, there's many different things that we see. Psychosis is one of them. Cannabis hyperemesis syndrome or scromiting is another regular diagnosis that we see in the emergency department.
That's where they can't stop throwing up.
Yes. It's a terrible disease. And people have died from it. So, you know, you have to take it seriously. There are at least 3 case reports of people who have died from cannabis hyperemesis syndrome. I talked to a mom who lost her son from cannabis hyperemesis syndrome. He died from it. I call it an audible diagnosis. We hear it. I hear people screaming and retching at the same time. Nothing's coming up. They're miserable. They're kicking their feet up in the air, extremely anxious. There's not a lot that looks like that, or I can hear it. You know, I can have my back, you know, to the patient, and I know what's going on. And these are not people who, it's not a weekend warrior. These are people who've been using marijuana on a regular basis for years, and they have messed up their cannabinoid system. Their cannabinoid receptors are malfunctioning. Their electric wiring is misfiring. And instead of people think, oh, I need, and the patients even think, well, I need my marijuana to help my appetite, because they're invariably very skinny people. This has been going on for a while, and they think that they need it to help their appetite, to help their nausea, and it's actually causing the opposite effect.
And Rodney, I'm sorry, for you as a doctor, when you have to treat these people, there's not much you can do other than supportive care. I know there's been some work on people using some antipsychotic drugs. How would you treat a patient that came in with hyperemesis other than supportive care?
Right. Well, that is supportive care. So they're coming miserable, and I'm explaining, I will make you feel better, right? And I'll make sure you're not, you know, again, going to die from this. And I'll give them fluids because they're dehydrated. I'll give them nausea medications, and I'll give them antipsychotic medications because that helps with the vomiting as well and helps calm them down. It's important to know what I won't do. I'm not going to get CAT scans and radiation. These patients have had maybe 30 CAT scans in their life, and they'll say, oh, nobody knows what's wrong with me. And I will explain to them, I'll ask them, have you had a CAT scan? And sometimes they say, sometimes they don't. I'll look at the chart and I'll say they've had a million CAT scans. I'm not going to give you another CAT scan, which is a lot of radiation that can give you cancer later in life. And I'll explain to the patient, listen, keep a copy of your CAT scan. If this happens to you again, bring it to the doctor so they know, so you don't get more radiation unnecessarily. I also won't give opioids. They're in pain and they're asking for opioids, but I'm not going to get addicted to another drug while they're addicted to marijuana. I will want to help them feel better, but I'm going to do it without opioids. So what not to do is also really important. And I may check electrolytes. Some people need to be admitted to the hospital, so I take this seriously. So getting people to feel better is number one. But also, I don't want this to happen to them again. They're miserable. And so I have to explain what's happening to them, why it's happening to them, so they have an opportunity. I'm not going to blow them off. I'll explain to them that this is what's happening. What they need to do is to stop using marijuana, but that's easier said than done, and I acknowledge that. Because if they come to me in the emergency department at this stage, they're not going to just, you know, say, okay, well, I'm just going to quit, you know. Say that to, you know, somebody who has severe alcoholism or severe nicotine addiction. It's like, oh, you'll just say quit. It's a lot harder said than done, and I acknowledge that. But I emphasize the importance. And I tell them what to expect, that, you'll have withdrawal for a couple weeks. Maybe there's medicines to help with that withdrawal. And how to treat symptoms, so send them home with some medications for nausea and follow up and urge them to get help with addiction. So, and acknowledge that this is a problem.
Wow. There's no drugs like Anabuse out there, which is for alcohol addiction. There's no drugs like that for marijuana, which would make them violently vomit
I know there's some under development, and on my podcast I had some of the scientists who were working on medications, but there isn't anything FDA approved at this time.
Interesting. Well, I would be very curious to know how many of the people that you're seeing just are completely unaware or unwilling to admit or all that, that marijuana is the cause of their problem and that it's addictive.
You know, you don't know, and I've been a physician for a long time. I have to give every single patient the benefit of the doubt. Some people may blow me off and say no, they're not ready to hear it. But some people are incredibly, incredibly thankful. So I can't go into a patient encounter and figure out who's going to, you know, even be angry about me talking to them about marijuana and who's going to be incredibly thankful and change their life around. So every single patient gets the benefit of the doubt. And at some point in their life, hopefully they'll be ready to make a change. If they're not that day, maybe it'll be, you know, they'll have to have the experience again. And then they'll think, oh, well, that doctor did say that. And maybe it'll click at that time later.
Sure. Well, I mean, you hear it from so many people, oh, there's no way it could be addictive, oh, it doesn't do this, doesn't do that. And I'm thinking some of the people that come to your emergency room either thought that way or still think that way, and here you are trying to help them not do that. So
fake news and fake science, because we know we have data on addiction. Depending on, again, the potency and the frequency, addiction could be up to 50% or even higher.
Well, and what I think what I'm seeing, too, in the school with the kids is, you know, and these are young kids, and I hear tons of stuff. But it's, you know, you start to have a conversation with these kids about pot or anything, and they're like, oh, my mom smokes it all the time. And they just don't correlate that. You know, if the mom's doing it, it can't be bad.
Right.
You know, and so here are these, you know, 12 and 13-year-olds, this is what they grow up with. They don't know.
When we have to take another quick break. When we come back, though, let's stick with that. And I'm also curious to know from you how much legalizing it in the state of California has exploded this problem, because I kind of think I already know the answer, but you're an actual doctor, and I've only stayed at a Holiday Inn Express, so so I've not even qualified. Oh, my gosh. Our guest is Dr. Ronit Lev. She actually is a dually board-certified emergency and addiction medicine physician, bringing over 25 years of experience treating frontline cases of addiction. So just in case you thought we were just having a chat with somebody who just, you know, maybe finished medical school last week, no, she's got a little history under her belt. You can find this interview this afternoon, commercial free actually, on our website at wethepeopleradio.us. Nice job, Bill.
Hey, thanks.
This is James Brown, soul brother number one, always fighting. Now I'm fighting for your life. I'm fighting for your life because if you use drugs, you better leave it alone. Drugs are contagious. They're killers. Every drug is a killer. Stay away from drugs. Drugs will take your life away. And if you want to live, stay away from drugs because they are super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad. Superman,
Superman. Sometimes I really think I'm going crazy in the night. When I hide down in the covers and I won't turn out the light. I think nothing's gonna get to me, but then again it might. What can I do to keep from going crazy?
You can stop smoking pot. Here you go. We finally have an answer to Kim Carnes' age-old question. What can I do? All right. So go back to Kathy's thing and then talk to us about how legalizing all this mess. Did you see
it? I pulled up some data during the break just so I could give you a database.
That's why we take breaks.
There is a California marijuana report published by HIDA, the High Intensity Drug Trafficking Areas. They do that every couple of years. In their most recent report, California youth marijuana use ages 12 to 17. California continues to have a higher rate of past month use of marijuana in individuals aged 12 and over between 2011 and 2018. For ages 18 to 25 for California, California marijuana use from ages 18 to 25 continues to surpass the use of cigarettes, 25.16% compared to 14.5%. So that's kind of the data. And the data also shows that perception of harm goes down. So a perception of harm, like you were saying, oh, kids think it's not such a big deal. As that perception goes down, then, you know, use goes up as well.
Hmm. Wow.
But when talking about kids, you mentioned, oh, well, what hope is it for 13-year-olds when their parents are using marijuana? I think, it's nice to have parents involved in the discussion, but I think any parent would want their child to have the best future, best brain growth possible. And I think that we need to be teaching at a very young age in grade school about the brain and protecting your brain. So if you your brain isn't done growing, like we mentioned, until you're 25 to 27 years old, if you use drugs, any drugs, not just marijuana, alcohol, nicotine, you know,
caffeine,
cocaine, meth, anything, it doesn't matter what, then your chance of becoming addicted is up to 7 times higher for someone with a developing brain than someone my age. And I love teaching kids how their brain grows because it's interesting And you could even show pictures of it. And I could show pictures of the brain neurons. So when you're, I have a little brand, like 2 months old. And she has, like, you know, a few neurons growing, and they're starting to grow. But not many. You could see, like, she's, like, you know, learning how to see and move her arm and different things like that. By the time you're 6 years old, you have a lot of neurons. Your brain, it has too many neurons, actually, and you could, like, see it on slides. Like, you have way too many of these, like, little spaghetti strings connecting to each other. And your brain says, wait, yeah, this is too much. You can see these little six-year-olds running around. They got, like, you know, they're over-energized. The brain says, we got too many of these. We got to pick and choose which of these pathways in the brain we're going to keep and which one we're going to toss. And the way the brain decides that is, like, use it or lose it, right? If you're using your brain to, you know, do music or athletics or language or reading, then those pathways are going to grow and be stronger. If they're exposed to drugs and marijuana or that kind of behavior, then those pathways become stronger. It's not forever. The brain is adaptable. So if people have a substance use disorder or addiction later on in life, it's treatable. The brain is adaptable, but it's a lot better to have preventive measures, because it could take years for your brain to readjust. But that's something that's happening. The other thing that the way that your brain is growing is through myelin. Myelin is the coating of your neurons. Your neurons are like an electric wire, right? Connecting one electric wire to the other. Just like with electricity, if you have a raw wire and you're waiting for electricity to pass through it, it'll go slowly. If it has coating, it'll go a lot faster. And myelin helps neurons conduct and send messages in your brain much faster. The last place of your brain to get myelin is your frontal lobe. That's why they say, oh, the last place of your brain to go is your frontal lobe. And that part of your brain, your executive functioning part of your brain, is in charge of planning, problem solving, motivation, judgment, decision making, impulse control. All those things are important. Why adolescence is a great age for learning and adventures. Also why people make, like, what are you thinking of? Can't you think of the future? Why are you making those risks? Because the frontal lobe is not yet developed and needs to be protected until age 25 or 27. And the other way, should I keep going?
Keep going.
Mm-hmm.
The other way, so we talked about how your brain is growing with the synaptic pruning, like pathways. We talked about myelin. And the other way that drugs can affect your brain is through dopamine. And dopamine is a neurochemical that you need to live. You need dopamine, like you need oxygen and you need water. And you make your own dopamine. But if you get it, dopamine from other places, if you're getting your dopamine from marijuana or from cocaine or meth or other places, then your body says, wait a second, I'm getting too much dopamine. I need to auto-regulate and not make my own dopamine. And now you got a problem, because now your body says, I'm not going to make my own dopamine when I'm getting it from the outside, but you need it to live, and it creates a vicious cycle of you actually needing drugs. This is what addiction is, needing it just not to even get high, but just to feel normal. That's true for marijuana, cocaine, heroin, opiates, any type of drug. Again, you can get back to normal, but it takes time.
So my question here, because we're talking a lot about the science of marijuana and how it affects you. Why is it, as a nation, we are so easily believed? We believe the science on so many issues, but when it comes to marijuana, people do not want to believe it.
I think there's two parts to that question. One is, there are people who absolutely love marijuana. They're addicted. It's their religion.
Right.
Can you imagine telling people, like, not to follow their religion? You'll never change their mind. And, you know, that's the way it is. But I think the majority of Americans are not like that. They're susceptible to whatever they hear on the media. And the answer to that is follow the money. Exactly. We've lived with success, all right, right? We've lived through this with tobacco. Tobacco's great, healthy. Right. All our soldiers are using it. Everyone's using it. It's good for you. It helps anxiety. It really does help anxiety. It helps people with schizophrenia. It actually does. Those things are true. But the harms are hidden, right? Right. Now everybody who smokes understands that there is a risk of lung cancer and heart disease. And if they choose to smoke cigarettes, they may be told to do it somewhere else where the secondhand smoke is not effective. But we finally, after 100 years, got that message across. But it was the same playbook, right? Huge billions of dollars of industry are pushing this narrative. And the same people, actually, are pushing that narrative with marijuana. And so what's one ER doctor, you know, going to talk about protecting your brain compared to, you know,
the billions of dollars
industry telling you how good this is for you.
Right, right. And that's what I say, even when Officer Joe and I discuss this, you know, it's like, follow the money, you know, look at our politicians, follow the money. And that's how their decision process is guided, is by the money. And that's really sad.
I noted you, Ronit, when you...
So were disappointed with that this year.
Yep.
Especially, we had, 2 years ago, we had a bill in California asking for labels.
Right.
We have labels on everything. Your own tax has a label.
Right,
your
car
seat has a label. You watch TV and there's a label. Like, you could have flashing lights. We believe in labels. All we wanted is labels, you know, science, evidence-based labels on cannabis products. And
it got shot down.
California Senate and governor, you know, we're not going to take it. So next year we thought, what can we do? What can we... Since, you know, 1996, we haven't had any laws in California to protect the public from marijuana. The industry has just gone unregulated and unwatched and developed all these genetically modified products and high potency with nobody calling a stop to it. And we thought, you know, what does everybody care about? People care about babies, right?
Right.
People care about children. And we were able to show data that the number one poisoning in our emergency departments for children under the age of 3 is marijuana. We see that in school poisonings in older kids, but we see that in babies. And what we wanted is protection on these candy products for children. Why do we need, you know, Snicker bars that look like marijuana or Weedos that look like Cheetos? Like, why are we doing that to our children?
Right.
Who is that? It sounded like something we could have universal support just to protect children. By the government. Just ridiculous. I'm really upset.
Follow the money. Follow the money.
Ronit, we think
children would appeal to children.
Ronit, we were very heartened when we saw you on the Dr. Phil show, and you took on a proponent of the marijuana industry. And you very effectively took apart her argument about alcohol being more safe, being less safe than marijuana. And we've got about a minute, and maybe you could just talk about alcohol and marijuana.
Yeah, we could talk about it next hour, too. So
that's no pressure. The common narrative is saying, well, it's better than alcohol.
Right.
But if you and that's just a common, you know, if everybody think, oh, it's better than alcohol. Alcohol is bad, believe me. I'm in an emergency department every day. I see alcohol poisoning. We have the data. We know how bad alcohol is. We're only now gathering the data on marijuana. But if you have a teenager who gets drunk once, they're, you know, it's not healthy for them, but they're not going to get liver failure and die. But if they get high once, they could potentially have a committed life to having psychosis and schizophrenia.
On that note, we have to take a really, we're going to get cut off by the news here. Let's continue that on the back side of the news. And I found a little song for us so you can think about what your life is going to be like if you stick with the old marijuana deal. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I was gonna go to work, but then I got high. Ooh, I just got a new promotion, but I got high. Now I'm selling dope, and I know why.
Why, man?
Hey, cause I got high, because I got high, because I got high. La da 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 da. I was gonna go to court before I got high. Ooh, I was gonna pay my child support, but then I got high.
Hi, this is James Brown, Soul Brother number one. Always fighting. Now I'm fighting for your life. I'm fighting for your life because if you use drugs, you better leave it alone. Drugs are contagious. They're killers. Every drug is a killer. Stay away from drugs. Drugs will take your life away. And if you want to live, stay away from drugs. Because they are super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad.